It is hot here. I can't lie to you. It is really hot. Like 38 today.
How hot is it?
No, 38.
Oh, yeah. So that 38.
So hot.
Yeah.
The thermometer says 38.
Good to know.
Hello and welcome to episode 238 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tubingen, Germany, and with me as always is...
Adam, still in Vancouver.
On the back of a flatbed truck, evidently.
Can you hear stuff?
I don't know, I hear some noise.
Oh, I think that's...
You're not in the studio today.
Yeah, no, I'm in the studio.
What's going on,
with
Adam?
A wind machine behind me.
I'm working at the tambourine factory. That would be hard to get good ambient sound. What's going on, Adam?
Wedding. Finished that wedding.
Yes. Did they buy it on Amazon?
Yes.
I recently bought something, but not on Amazon.
Okay.
I found a much... Well, you're going to find out. I got it shipped to your house.
Right.
Oh,
I've been using it.
Yeah, no, you haven't yet. I've been tracking it. It's not there.
Okay.
But, however, I didn't get it on Amazon due to the fact that it was way cheaper elsewhere.
Okay.
So there's that.
Did you click through our site elsewhere?
I tried. I don't think we'll get a kickback, but, you know... Gave it a go. Can't hurt to try, right?
Right.
So there's that. But so no Amazon for me this week, I don't think.
I don't think I bought anything this week either.
Good story.
Yeah. Yay, Amazon.
I'm sure other people did, though.
Well, they had the big... Did they do it in Germany? They had the big Prime Day event here.
I was a little bit confused by that because, yes, they did. And that was, what, the 15th?
Yeah, 15th.
Okay, now just to let everybody know, we are way ahead here. We're recording a few episodes ahead because of summer schedules. So when we say the 15th, it's the 15th of July, and you're listening to this way later than that. But
right,
it confused me because 15, not a prime number.
Oh, yeah, I don't think that they had that in mind.
I feel like that would have been, you would have had to do something like that.
Apparently
no.
Not.
Like if it was like 3rd of January, it'd be a 13. That's a prime number.
Right. Do you want to go through more prime numbers?
No, probably.
You can just list them all.
Yeah. No. I'm going to stay away from doing that, but that was very confused. So what was Prime Day? Do you know?
I think it was just they had sales. They're more or less trying to get people to sign up for Prime memberships because if you were a Prime member, then it was they were advertising, you know, more deals than Black Friday, you know, which is a big deal for Americans, Black Friday, where they have all kinds of crazy door crashing deals. So I think the idea was, hey, let's get our Prime membership up. And if you sign up for a Prime membership, then you're eligible for all these deals. I'm a Prime member, did not even look.
Yeah, same. I didn't need anything,
exactly,
so I didn't bother going through, so there you go. However, if you do need something or want something, click through our site and it helps us out. So, wedding.
Yeah, I did it.
How did that go? You told us it was going to be... Did the smoke clear? That's the main question.
The smoke cleared, but they got basically the first rainy day in Vancouver there has been in like 2 months, so...
Isn't that ironic?
Yeah, that part wasn't ideal. On the upside is it made for, you know, nice, even, overcast lighting. And it did, and the rain really didn't affect pictures for the most part, because it when we did kind of the creative stuff, you know, the bridal party photos in between the ceremony and the reception, like where you get to do the fun stuff as a photographer, the more fun creative stuff, it wasn't raining at that point, so none of my gear got wet, and we could kind of move around outside to the locations that they favored, and that worked out quite nicely. So brought my wife with me, who we discussed before, kind of to act as a spotter and a voice activated light stand, and and all went well. So I'm in the process of editing all the photos. I've sent them the batch of photos I've edited and sent them back, the ones, the fun ones, like I just described, that between for the bridal party, between the reception and the actual ceremony. And so I've been working my way through. I'm pretty sure they've said it's no problem for me to post stuff. So I'll kind of put a collection together. I don't want to have people, you know, have to scroll through 500 pictures, but maybe I'll put, you know, 25 or something up, in our folder, our Facebook page or something like that. I will post some eventually once I get through them all.
Great. So it was a good experience.
Good experience. Again, just one of those things that the more you do, the more comfortable you get, the more things you kind of figure out. But no, I was really happy with how the photos. It is work though. That's what I've realized. It is not. When you go and you shoot a family portrait for somebody and you're kind of there for 45 minutes and done, it's a different animal altogether. And I'm sure Amber can attest to this, to going and shooting for 10 hours or 9 hours. And it's real work. So it stops becoming a hobby at about the 1.5 hour mark.
I find that I sort of look... I kind of look ahead to certain benchmarks on the day, like, okay, I'll get through the ceremony, you know, and then I can get through this, like, and I have each step, and then I kind of work my way through to sort of pace myself, because it really is a marathon that you're running that day.
So for anyone who their friend says, oh hey, do you mind shooting my wedding? You'll just be there, in the morning to take the pictures of the guys having fun, and then you'll be there in the afternoon to do the guys and girls getting ready, and then you'll just kind of stay through to the dancing and that. If they're a friend, I would kindly tell them that's not a good idea.
Yes, it's the J word that gets you. Yeah. Can you just?
Yeah.
Because you can never just.
Yeah.
It's never, hey, can you just hang on to this $500 for me and go ahead and keep it?
Yeah.
That's never a thing. It's never just that. It's, hey, can you help me take this hide-a-bed up 2 flights of stairs? And P.S., I won't be there, so you're on your own. Thank you.
Yeah. It's definitely a job, and one that I think should be treated like a job. And so, yeah, it's a lot of work. So just go in there with that knowledge for anybody who's on the brink of deciding, oh, whether or not they want to do this, just understand that it's like any job. It's a lot of work. And then it's a lot of editing, because once you take those, whatever, 1,000 pictures, I think I filled 2 8 gig cards, and I was on a third one. So, you know, a 20 megapixel camera. I think I came home with, like, I don't know, 1,000 pictures. And so, you know, that's a lot of sifting through to do. So, you know, whatever the number of hours, I think roughly you figure you shoot, you're going to figure at least an hour to hour to ratio of editing and sorting time, right?
If you're just doing basic post-processing without doing a lot of, like, you know, touch-ups and stuff like that, like just going through and doing photo, like maybe color correction, a little contrast, something like that, and exporting JPEGs, you'll be lucky to get a 1-to-1.
Yeah.
Like an hour, you know, 1 hour shooting, 1 hour of post. The moment you do you add anything else to that mix, it's going to be 2-to-1. It really is going to add up that quickly.
And I mean, some of it...
We're going to pause as the tractor goes past my house.
Okay. Well, yeah. And I was going to say, and some of it is, like, for weddings, and I don't know if this ever got discussed with Amber, but, you know, there's also... I like to convert some photos to black and white. Like, I'm not going to do all of them in black and white, but certain photos that I just think look better in black and white, I want to provide both the color version and the black and white version. So that essentially becomes editing it twice, right? So
I used to do that. Now, one thing I found was that like I used to do them all in color and all in black and white and sort of do like a batch process. Mm-hmm. And then go basically, and then go through and then tweak the few that needed tweaking. But for the most part, they converted to black and white quite nicely. But then I found that like the client just had too much to sift through.
Mm-hmm.
So I would do the same. I would do a couple in black and white and then give it to them in color as well. But even then I thought, no, I'm just going to give them, you know, like each picture's once, each photograph they get once. One, you know, some will be in color, some will be in black and white. Now, if they ask and say, hey, I kind of would like that one in color, I'll go back and do one or two.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't generally care.
Yeah, and that's the way I'm looking at it. There's certain ones that I just think will look better in black and white, so those are the ones that I'm converting to black and white. And I'm kind of assuming the same thing as you, is if there's a specific photo that, you know, they say, oh, wow, I'd really like that one in black and white as well, no problem, we'll do that. But I'm thinking that they're going to have so many photos that they're really not going to be thinking, oh, I really wish I had that one out of the 600 converted into black and white. They're just going to look at another photo and say, yeah, that one is the one I'm using.
Right. Great. So how many hours were you there on the day?
I got there at 2 and I left at 10. So 8 hours of shooting.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. And that's, you know, with like a 2 hour break in the middle and a couple coffee breaks.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No.
Union mandated.
I did, my wife and I did have dinner. So that was, you know, 15, 20 minutes that we took a break. Once everyone else was eating, there was really nothing to shoot. And so wasn't going to shoot people eating their food. So that was our spot to have something to eat and just catch a breather and let the sweat dry.
Did they take our advice and let you eat first?
No, and it didn't matter to me. Basically, we waited for everyone else to eat. It was just a buffet, so it was a small wedding too. So I don't know, maybe 80 people. So once everybody else went through the buffet, then we went. But you know, we had basically stopped and taken a break the second that it was time for people to go up and eat. So I probably stopped shooting for 20, 25 minutes. And then as soon as we had finished eating, then I went back and everyone else at that point had finished eating. And I just shot, you know, as they're walking around talking to some guests, I took some photos of that. So just kind of some of the candid stuff there before they started the speeches and stuff. So I think timing wise, it all went, according to plan. And what I'm realizing, because now this is the second wedding in a row, is I'm getting pretty good at, getting the shot and moving on when it comes to like the creative stuff. Like when we did some lighting, off camera flash, like again with my wife holding the flash in, just holding it manually rather than even using a light stand, in the little softbox that we have, that little Q-box softbox. And we use that for some creative shots. And, you would think with lighting, and I think they had like an hour and a half from the time the reception was over, and this was going to be the time to photograph all the family and then do all the creative stuff and then get back. And, you know, people say, oh, that, you know, that sounds like a reasonable amount of time. I finished that in under an hour. I did all the family shots, and there was, you know, sisters, brothers. We did it on a pool deck. We changed locations. We went down. We shot about three or four different spots, all close together, all walking, like, you know, 2 minute walk from one spot to another. But because they were on the water getting different shots with different backgrounds, and all of that done in, yeah, I'd say roughly 50 minutes. And we had done so many different setups and shots that it was just the point was like, all right, let's go back and start dinner early. So I think that having a helper makes a huge difference. And also it comes down to, I don't take 20 shots of the same thing thinking, oh, okay, we're going to get the perfect smiles on every person. I basically get the composition I want, take five or six. And if not one of them is any good, well then fine, moving on to the next one. They're going to have enough different setups that we're going to have it covered regardless. So I was really happy. And in doing it that way, there wasn't a single setup or pose where there wasn't one of the five or six that was good. So
Good. Good job.
No LCD checking. You'll be proud of that. Like from the standpoint of showing them, I did not show them a single picture from the whole day on my LCD. Nobody asked to, so that was nice.
Really?
Sign of the times. One thing I didn't pick up on, and apparently nobody else did, is groom had a cell phone in his pocket even when he walked down the aisle.
Right. In case he gets that last minute offer.
Yeah.
Hang on, it's Heidi Klum. Hang on a second.
Yeah, I just thought it was like, it was, you know, obviously sign of 2015. Like you don't go anywhere without your phone, because it was in his pocket. And again,
and the outline, just
see,
right?
Yeah, you see the outline, and again, I don't think that anybody is gonna really care. Notice when you're pixel peeping the way, you know, we tend to do when we're editing photos, it's just like, wow, didn't notice that. And then I started going back to photos that I'd already looked through and just thought, I wonder if it's there. And obviously sometimes you don't see it based on angles or where the jacket is and whatnot. But yep, even in the walking down the aisle, cell phone is there. So there you go. Huh. Sign of 2015.
Well, it happened. I mean, it's reality. What can you
do?
Yeah,
I'm not going to Photoshop it out, and it really doesn't matter to me. I just thought it was interesting. I was like, mm-hmm. There's one little thing that, you know, if anybody noticed, including the groom, would have just said, hey, maybe take that out of your pocket, right?
I think I might have let you keep it just to make fun of you later. That's how I would do it. I'd keep calling you.
Yeah. And it plays some like super loud rock music as your ringtone. Yeah, that would be awesome. That would be awesome if you noticed and you were a guest that you just keep repeat dialing. Yeah,
I feel like that's the route. I'd have to borrow your phone, but I would do that. Yeah. But great.
But good experience and really nice, Brian Groom. And like I say, as soon as I get them done, I'm going to put some photos up on Facebook for people to check out so that everyone can do what they do on Facebook and say, "Oh, fabulous, great." I'd really like people just to tear them apart. Yeah.
Oh, Facebook.
Yeah.
I shot a selfie this week.
Oh no.
Did
with
you
your
see
stick,
it?
Your new stick?
No.
Oh just, yeah, it looked like someone beat you with a stick.
It looked like I got hit with the selfie stick.
Yeah, I saw it.
Wow. No, I crashed my bike.
Okay.
My
this
bicycle.
Time, this time was it someone else's fault?
What do you mean this time?
Well, remember someone like hit you with a car? I don't know, 2 years ago or something. And
oh,
big,
that's
big,
right.
Big altercation, and the person basically with the car blamed it on you. So I'm wondering if you could blame this on somebody else.
Oh no, 100%.
Okay,
but it was a pretty. It was this was actually way worse than the getting hit by a car.
Okay,
I'd forgotten about the getting hit that I got hit by a car. Yeah, that's right. Anyways, no, this one was, there's a big festival in town called the Stadtfest. It happens every 2 years in Tübingen.
Okay.
And so normally we have baseball, it's a baseball weekend off. And so we can just go and focus on you know, and we run some, like a booth at the place, you know, sell beer and hot dogs and stuff like that in
oh,
town.
Oh, so it's a baseball weekend off.
It's off, like we don't play.
Oh, you just sell hot dogs.
But the whole organization goes, you know, can focus on doing that, and so that's the plan. And so you go Friday, Saturday night, and it's just a huge party in town. Like there's bands playing everywhere. Like it really is a fantastic time. If you're ever in town for it, I recommend going.
Okay.
But anyways, turns out a week before we got rained out against our Mannheim game, and then it got rescheduled to that Saturday. So I was supposed to be, you know, work the afternoon shift on Friday, and then stay in. Hang out and, you know, good times, but then we had to play the next day in Mannheim. So I can't do that. I can't go out and party all night.
No, you're an old man.
I am an old man and a responsible individual is the way I was framing that.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, around 11 o'clock, I'd had probably, you know, by that point, over the span of 5-6 hours, I'd probably had 2 beers and I said, okay, it's 11 o'clock. I'm going to be responsible. I'm going home and bike lights and everything like that. No helmet, of course.
Right, that's how you do it.
Yeah, well, I have a strict no crashing policy, which was breached. Yeah, and so anyway, so I'm heading home. I'm literally 60 seconds out of town. I have about a 20-minute bike ride ahead of me in the dark.
Right.
And 60 seconds in, I'm going down the bike path. Well, I'm assuming drunk pedestrian just wandered off of the pedestrian path right out into the bike path, right in front of me.
Okay.
So I'm the good guy that I am. I swerve to miss him and hit a giant rock, like a big stone, like knee high.
Ooh.
But I didn't see it.
Yeah, because it's dark.
Yeah. And so I went, the bike stopped. I kept going straight, face first, over the handlebars.
Oh.
And landed on the ground. Luckily, I didn't get my hands up in time to, so I broke the fall with my face. 100% with my face. Like, I was right, I didn't even know what it was, a pavement, because like I hit my head really hard because I no longer remember the moment before the crash or the moment after.
Okay.
Crash, I remember, because that was, boom, that was in there. But anyways, so I'm laying there, and I'm bleeding all over and just covered in my own blood. And first thing I do is I just check for my teeth.
Right.
They were all there.
Okay.
So everything else was irrelevant. My neck wasn't broken. Teeth are there. Moving on. I'm okay.
Okay.
people are screaming. That was like, judging by their screams, it was a pretty good crash. And it would have been awesome to see. If it was us and we saw a guy do that, it'd be pretty awesome. And so, anyway, so I get up and they all hand me like tissues and stuff, because I to try to stop the bleeding. I'm like, I'll be fine. So now I have to get on my bike, which fortunately isn't really broken.
It's not.
Luckily. No. Luckily, it turns out later I got home and found it a little bit broken, but I could still ride it.
Okay.
So then I had to ride across 20 minutes across to get home. And
bleeding in the dark.
Bleeding everywhere. Bleeding in the dark, yeah. But then the next day, I had had my lighting setup still up in the studio there.
Yeah.
Because I'd shot some, the white background stuff and thought, yeah, I'll just get a selfie of this.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's what you're looking at. So all in all, considering how bad the wipeout was, it worked out pretty good.
It's a nice photo.
Yeah, it's a nice little memory. Because I have none.
Yeah.
So there you go. So that was my week.
Well, nice. You should put that up in your hall walkway. Just a huge enlargement of that.
I think I might do that.
Freak people out. Like, because at first glance, if they're not really paying attention, they'll be like, "Oh, nice photo. Oh, whoa, what's going
on?
Wait
a second."
Yeah.
Yeah. Good times. So, but whenever something like this happens, that is the time that you take a selfie.
Mm-hmm.
Highly recommend it. I wish I had. It was brought to my attention when I got the nail stuck in my eye a few months ago, and someone asked, "Did you get a selfie of it?" I thought, I wish I had. Didn't
missed,
though.
Missed opportunity. Next time, yeah, you get a nail in your eye,
that won't happen again. No. Okay. I will wear eye protection. So there you go. A lot of interesting stuff this week. This week's challenge.
Yes.
Was issued last week. I think it was issued by me, because we talked about the buying your first flash.
Right.
And do you need to have ETTL? And so this week's challenge was ETTL. So,
okay.
You want to go first or second? Quick.
I'll go first.
Okay, let's have a look at yours. All right, this looks like your daughter studying.
She was actually writing a story, but she put the pencil down for a second. There was one picture.
Whoa, hang on. Is your TV broken?
It was just temporarily on the fritz.
Oh, okay.
No, she was writing a story, and so there was a pencil. At this moment, I think it's actually in her right hand, but it's hidden behind her face and ear. So, yeah, I just got down on the floor. There's not a whole lot of light. There's a tiny bit of window light in this scenario, making it to her left arm. But not a lot of light. So I'm lying down on the floor and I'm shooting at like F2 and just basically have the flash on camera with the black foamy thing and just kind of bouncing it off the ceiling / wall to my left.
And color is the wall?
It's a beigey color.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, okay, you get sort of the beigey kind of toned light. And and then it's just kicking that soft light back. But I would say... I saw with yours, you showed the without flash shot, which I didn't think to do. I should have done that just to show the difference. But there's no light here. This is at a ISO 100, so or 125. So there's really no ambient light in the room other than a tiny, tiny little bit of, like I say, a little bit on her left arm. That's it. So let the flash do the lifting here, and there you go. So
How often do you shoot with like this sort of style with ETTL?
I don't know. I used to do it more. But now if I was going to do a, like, this is good for like a runaround shot. Like at a wedding, I did a lot of shots with ETTL. Cause again, I was bouncing light, because you know, I don't really have time to set it up. So it works in that scenario. Usually if I was looking at the scenario and I had my camera and there wasn't enough light, I probably wouldn't bother taking the shot in the first place. Like it's just, I would just basically either do the full setup or I would shoot with ambient light only, and me going and grabbing the flash and doing the ETTL, I'd say maybe comes up once a month.
Yep. If that for me, and mostly, you know, in mid February or something like that, when it's just dark all the time and you really have to supplement that light. That's generally when my flash comes out, but it doesn't make it out very often. And it's too bad because you look at this, this is a great photo. It's very simple. That's the thing is you're looking at it through, you know, your quote unquote lens of, you know, fancy setups and compared to what you can do, this is really, really, this is slow pitch softball.
Right.
And so I don't think you give it like its due, like just in general. This is just a good photo. I mean, there she is, you know, concentrating. The depth of field is almost zero. It's just, you know, you have everything you need here. It's well lit. And because you didn't really have to do much work on the day, it sort of feels like nothing.
Mm-hmm. No, it was done in 3 seconds. That's all this was, yeah.
Well, it was done in 4 years and 3 seconds.
Right, right. But I'm just saying that the actual time doing this, like F2...
Yes.
Kill all the ambient light, put the flash on, and boom. And you might have to aim your flash in a few different spots, you know, because you are bouncing it to figure out where you like how the light comes back. So you might take 5 tries and you'll see how, you know, wildly different the photo looks based on where you've got your flash directed. Because again, it's providing all of the light. That's all that's involved. So,
yep. I know, and I did the exact same thing. So here's mine, my shot of my son. And this is, well, I showed the photo with no flash.
Right, which shows that obviously there's no ambient light there, or very, very tiny bit of ambient light.
There is a little. We went down to the basement, and so we have window wells, like you know how basements have those.
Yeah,
and so the light comes in a very direct kind of shaft, and it's kind of cool. So I sat him in one of these little pools of light that comes down from the shaft, which basically would only just backlight him, like top and backlight him, so you can see his ear lit up, the side of his head, and his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, that's going to be great for a backlight. So I'm going to expose for that, which was very, very dark because it's bright sunlight coming into a dark room. And it's not lighting up the room, and so basically I'm exposing just for that rim light, and then simply flash put the ETTL on, bounce it off to my right. I didn't even grab the black foamy thing. I just was moving that quickly. I just ran downstairs, popped it on there, and bounced it off the side of like off the wall. However, if you look around, like every wall in this room is that sort of wine color.
Okay.
So that's a problem if you're going to bounce light. You're going to get really kind of a really bad looking red light bouncing back. Now, the ceiling is white. I painted the ceiling white, but that's not really the light I was looking for. I kind of wanted something directional. So lo and behold, on that one wall is our heater, the heating element?
Yeah.
For the room.
It's like a baseboard or...
No, it's like it goes like halfway up the wall. It's like a radiator.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's a radiator. And so, but I left those white. And so, it's, you know, it's big enough that I could just sit there and bounce it right off the heater and have it blast right back on them and get that directional light coming from camera right. And it took me about 10 times longer to talk about just now than it did to do this. Like, this is so unbelievably easy. And I think this is a good photo. Like, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. You and I both look at this like, yeah, it's fine.
Mm-hmm. I like
because
it.
Because we know. Well, I like okay, it.
Yeah, I like it more than fine just because, again, it's just a, such a great expression. And I like the shirt with the buttons and just the huge smile. And I don't know. I just it's a really good photo. So I think in the same way, I think you're not giving it as much credit. It's just a really, really good photo. So this is absolutely one that you could frame. So there you go.
Possibly. Now, the takeaway, this is why it is important that you do have at least one flash that has ETTL capability just for this, because if I had gone and it would have taken me so long to set up a softbox and, you know, make sure it stays off the wall and where do we feather it, versus, and my son wouldn't have sat still for that. You know, and so if he's moving around or any movement at all, so I actually fired off three different photos, like three quick snapshots, all of them ETTL, and just picked the best expression. That would never have happened if I had to go and light this.
Right.
So definitely what we said last week holds true in both our cases. Go with ETTL. Now, you still have to know how to use ETTL.
Mm-hmm.
You still have to know where to point. You know, where to bounce it. Like, you know, if I had taken this with just not bounce, like just basically full on-camera flash right in his face, would not have been a good photo.
No, it will look terrible. It will look like a deer in headlights.
Yes. And so you do have to know where to bounce. Know not to bounce it off the red walls. In this case, I think I ended up dialing it down 2/3 of a stop on the ETTL, like the exposure value for the flash. Just to pull a little bit of light. Otherwise, it was going to be a little too bright.
Mm-hmm. But it's considering the background too, right?
Yeah, it's kind of doing some math all around. That wasn't like I shot it and then, you know, chimped and then dialed it back down. I knew going in that -2/3 was going to be the wheelhouse. Or at least within a third of a stop either way.
Okay.
So manual settings on the camera, I knew exactly how to dial that in, set that to ISO 100 to knock down all the ambient, 1/200th of a second, max sync speed, and then dial in the aperture to expose for the shoulder light so that doesn't blow out, and then let ETTL do the rest of it. And that is legitimately 3 seconds to do. There you go.
Great. No, I love it.
All right. This week's topic.
One more thing. I was just going to say, if you showed somebody this, even a photographer, okay, so somebody who's you're really going to scrutinize how things are done, you show them this photo, there is no way they're going to think that this wasn't done as a studio shot. That's how good the light is. Like, you, again, even if I looked at it and you said, oh, what'd you do? It's softbox, you know, like maybe even a little bit of a rim light. And like, no, this is done with an on-camera flash, which is what makes it so great. So I know we talk about a lot of times like all the elaborate setups, but it really just can be this easy. So that's basically a commercial for why you should buy your Yongnuo flash on Amazon and start doing this. Yeah,
I did shoot mine with a Canon, but I'm sure I would have got the same results with a Yongnuo.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. All right. Moving on. I wanted to throw that in because, like I say, I look at it again. I'm like, no, it's a studio shot. If you would pay money, like a lot of people do, to get a photo of their kids like this in a studio, and it's so much easier than that.
Just buy yourself a camera and do it yourself.
There you go. That's why.
Yeah.
On Amazon. All right,
This week's topic, we talked to your friend and my friend now too, but you brought him to the show, Dwayne Gervan.
Okay.
He's putting on a workshop in the next coming up in the next week or so. I think it's August the 8th in and around Vancouver. I'm not sure exactly where, but he's going to tell us just now. And it's all about shooting with models. And so we talked to him last year. He was on the show last year when we were actually at one of his workshops.
Right.
We didn't specifically talk about how to work with models and what, you know, what to look for and how to find them. I mean, you know, those sorts of things. And so we wanted to find out about that. So without further ado, here is Dwayne. So let's just jump right into it.
Absolutely.
So we're here, we're not with Dwayne. I think I lied. Adam and I lied. Originally, Dwayne was supposed to be on the program, but we are in luck. We have his partner in crime at Light Gangster. Hello, Brad Jarvis.
Hi. It's great to be here.
And great to talk to you. Thank you so much. We talked to you almost, I guess it was almost a year ago now. We were at...
It's catching up on a year. Yeah. It's a number of months.
Adam and I were talking about attending the Light Gangster Workshop in Vancouver last August, and you've got one coming up.
Yeah, we have another one. We're pretty excited about this one. There's been a little bit of buzz. This one's called Mid-Morning Night's Dream, and we're hosting it on August 8th, kind of in the middle of the day, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m.
And what does Mid-Morning Night's Dream mean?
Well, it's kind of an interesting time for us. We've found, just with our schedules and the schedules of other photographers in the area and models too, this is kind of a great time for us, this sort of late morning, early afternoon. There's not too much competition in terms of scheduling and what other people are doing. And so it's a great time for us to book a workshop, but it's kind of a weird time for lighting and stuff. So one of the things that we're going to play with in this workshop is how do you change the lighting that's available to you and do what you want with it. So this is a workshop that's getting out of the studio again. It's away from a white box studio, and we're going into a vintage retro location. It's a place called Arundel Mansions in New Westminster. Highly recommended. This is our second time that we are shooting in that space. And the pictures and the vibe that we got the last time was just really energizing. And so we're thrilled to be offering it again and heading back there. But the, you know, big windows and the hotel location, it's tricky to make the outside cooperate with what you want your pictures to look like. So that's kind of the challenge that's in front of us, is we want to really hone into crafting the light and working not just what's available, but kind of tweaking that with the studio lights and maybe some color gels and stuff.
And what are you shooting? What are the subjects?
Our work is always with models. So it's portraiture, verging on fashion, but kind of in that realm. So we anticipate having three or four models, and it could be more, depending on who, you know, comes out of the woodwork for these things. It's a bit of an interesting exercise trying to plan this kind of stuff, because it all depends on who hears about it and who's interested and where that enthusiasm comes from. The goal is to shoot pictures that people would be proud to show other people and show off their work, and that the models would be proud of that too. So it's kind of in a portraiture vein. I want to do some real sort of retro period stuff, maybe film noir-esque. That's all kind of unique to this particular workshop. We've explored different topics over the years that we've been doing this, but this one is kind of sort of a throwback. Some images that match the vibe of the space that's available to us.
So models, working with models, and that was for me, it was a great experience last year. Not something I do very often. You know, being a dad and that kind of stuff, I usually, my models are my kids and my wife.
Right.
But it was great. And that's why we wanted to have you guys on the show. I mean, where do we start? Why work with models? Whether they're paid or they're not, why work with experienced models?
Well, an experienced model brings a completely different sensibility to images. A good model is kind of a crossover between somebody who can nail a certain look, and an actress who can project a mood, a sensitivity, an emotion. So there's this whole interaction that a good model will do with not just the photographer, but the space and the lighting. And the more experience that a model has, the more tools that he or she brings to the table, in order to bring great pictures together. The kind of photography that we're into is highly collaborative. So there's you're kind of part of a team of a number of shooters. And so even that is just part of the collaborative experience. So you're working with a model directly, but there's other people in the scene and watching what you're doing and interacting and growing from each other's experience. So we've really appreciated the models that we've had, and we've had models that have spanned the gamut from You know, this is the first or second time I've been in front of a camera to models that have been in it for a good long time. And our sort of prerequisite going into this is that models are enthusiastic about what's happening here. And they're tuned into what a photographer needs and wants. And they're willing to enter into that sort of collaborative space. So yeah, we've really enjoyed the working relationship that we've established with models in and even through our workshops, where that becomes a sort of networking experience and a growing of our relationships that it goes in different directions. But we always want to serve our models well. So in a workshop, the way that we accomplish that is giving our models pictures that they can use in their portfolio or social media channels and show that their work is current and, you know, just their current looks and keeps their images fresh and moving. And it does the same thing for photographers too.
One of the things that I thought was great was that the models were really, they were able to take direction. Like if, you know, as when you're your photographer trying to get them to maybe make a certain pose or give you a certain emotion, they could take that and run with it, and they might actually take it and then go in a different direction with it or add something to it and bring something else to the table.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. A model is a whole creative performance unto itself in that way. So that adds something more than just a photographer's imagination. You're working with another person. And oftentimes what I find in the work that I've done is that the collaborative is greater than the sum is greater than the individual parts, mm-hmm. right? So you end up with something that neither of you would have been able to achieve independently, but together you've created something that you can both be happy about and that is kind of surprising. Right, it's just a little bit different than what you were anticipating. So
sure, it makes you elevate your game. I mean, imagine somebody who can come and sit down and be, you know, for the most part, uninhibited and really like they're not self-conscious in you know in a negative way, where they can sit down and give you what you're looking for and not have to think twice about, wow, this is going to look silly or what are my friends going to think. There's a whole professional side to it as well. I've worked, you know, when directing short films, movies, whatever, that I've worked with actors and non-actors.
Right.
I like actors.
Yep, totally. Yeah. And it's because they're tuned into an emotion and they can present that well, mm-hmm. Or a mood or, whatever, even if it's just, you know, some kind of way that they've interacted with the space and trying to make sense of that. A good model or a good actor can do something surprising with the things that they're presented with and locations and whatever. You mentioned professionalism, and I highly value professionalism. But the thing that I've really treasured in Light Gangster Workshops is that we've kind of developed a sense of fun and playfulness. So there is that element of we're all in it, and yeah, that sense of professionalism, and we're all owning this experience and being responsible about that. But you know, even part of that for us is being playful and not taking ourselves too seriously. And that goes both ways. So, you know, a photographer will ask for a pose and the model will do what they've asked for. And this happens to me all the time. I'll say, how about if we try this? And the model will do their best to accomplish that. And I'm like, that was a really bad idea on my part. That that's not working for either of us. And in a Light Gangster Workshop, we can laugh that off. It's not like, oh, now there's this kind of awkward pause and we're all kind of wondering what to look at. And yeah, it's not like that. For us, it's just like we roll with it. And there's a sense of playfulness and we invite photographers and models into that sensibility. We kind of check our egos at the door and right. And it's just we're all there to have fun. And that's kind of the primary goal. Of course, learning is built into all of that. But yeah, there is that capacity that I really want to add because, you know, just talking about a workshop in this way, there's people who have been exposed to all sorts of different styles and types of workshops. And Dwayne and I really try to drive this whole sensibility of fun that learning is fun and taking pictures is supposed to be a good time, and that's what it's at.
So. Right. One of the other things that I really liked about working with, like, again, the professional, and when I say professional, I mean maybe they're not always paid, but they do act like professionals, but the professional models and, like, specifically actors, is a really good actor. Sure, they can emote and bring all those things, but the big thing is they can hit their mark.
Right.
And that is so valuable when you're trying to you know, like you say, make this pose, do this. If they can hit their mark really quickly, you can get that look and you can move on. And that's what I liked really a lot about working at your workshop last year, was things move so fast. Like, so many different lighting setups and different, you're just rotating through at such a great speed. And it was a natural speed. It wasn't too fast.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that.
No, yeah. But you got such a great variety in such a short amount of time. That was the part that was really a great takeaway for Adam and I.
Yeah, that's very cool. Dwayne and I think in advance about the lighting setups that we want to put into that space and into that time. So that's the thing that we are controlling in advance. We've got the sort of intentions of how we want scenes to be lit. We'll usually go and scope the space beforehand, or if it's a space that we've already been in, then it's just that sort of forethought. But when you bring in people, then all of those things become fluid, right? There's all kinds of dynamics that can show up, and we aren't the kind of people who, you know, we've set up the lights, don't touch them. Mm-hmm. We want people to come in and just take ownership of the entire thing. So, you know, we've had wacky colors. We've tried all kinds of different experiments and stuff, and people seem to really warm up to that. So
let's say somebody wants to go and shoot, like, just on their own with a model or put on, you know, and have that experience. What do we look for? Like, first of all, what does a good model look like?
Well,
that's a trick question. Don't feel the need to answer that.
There are so many different looks that I would classify as a good model. And for me, it's about a person's ability to put themselves out there, to try something, to really work with a photographer's intention. So for me, it's not about a look. I've seen great images with models that are kind of in quotes, alternative models, people that don't fit necessarily the Hollywood or runway kind of stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I've seen people just come to life in front of a camera that are just completely surprising, the way the expressions work and how they carry themselves in front of a camera. It's like a completely different person. So first impressions are not always the strongest. Your question is how do you get started?
Well, the funny thing is like, I love the idea that you look for something, interesting and unique in a person.
Right.
And the alternative is really the way to go. Because a long time ago, I was working on a film, shooting like a behind the scenes kind of making of documentary of a Hollywood movie in Vancouver.
Okay.
And there was the main actor was a big hot TV star and on a big, very popular show in the States. And my girlfriend at the time, she knew him, and she's, oh my God, she was so jealous. I can't believe you get to meet this guy.
Yeah.
And all her friends were like, oh my, he's gonna work with him. And yeah. And I remember I met him. I didn't know the guy. I met him for the first time, and I thought, this is the guy they're raving about? Like, are you kidding me? Like, half the guys on my baseball team are better looking than this guy. And then right. I start rolling the camera. And, like, within 3 seconds in the camera, I'm looking at him going, oh, yeah, there it is. That's the movie star. He is 100% a movie star.
Right.
And he looked like $1 million as soon as you got the camera on him. Any decent lens, he looked fantastic. And so that's kind of what, like, the surprise when you're shooting, you know, models. Like you said, like the girl next door or what you would typically associate might not be the best look for you.
Right. Right, totally. Yeah.
So I like to look for things, you know, people that are interesting and unique, and that really is going to pop out. I mean, I was thinking about who would I think of, like, in the last 30 plus years of who would be a model like that. Like, you know, is Grace Jones just your average girl next door?
Right.
No, but
not so much.
Pops off the page, right? So, okay. So, and getting back to you said getting started with models. I cut you off there.
Yeah, well, you know, in my opinion, and I'm probably biased, maybe a little, I think heading out to a Light Gangster workshop or one that's similar is a great way of getting started with models. It's a kind of an organized space. We've got all the stuff squared away. We've got the location. We've got a makeup artist on hand, and the wardrobe is covered and all of that stuff. So there's a lot of the thinking that we've already done. And so a photographer just needs to show up and take it all in and get to work, try and put their vision into place and make that connection with the model. And it's fascinating to watch people just explore even that potential, what that relationship looks like and what that dynamic is. And some are very directed. I have a very specific image in mind, and it requires your arm to be over here and your chin needs to be 5 degrees more that way and stuff. And then there's other people who are just completely freeform and let models have their heads. And that's fun too. And then it's like, you did this really neat thing when you transferred from this pose to that pose. Can we try that again? Can we do that maybe somewhere in between those two or something? Mm-hmm. And so those kind of experiments are just great for the workshop environment where, you know, it's just a little bit more relaxed than if you were trying to shoot with a client or if you're on the clock somehow. There's a lot of pressure that is just not present in a workshop like ours. And so you get to see a variety of different interactions with, you know, all the different ways that photographers interact with models and how they direct and how that works or how it doesn't, right? So there's all these tools that become available joining one of our workshops. It's a relaxed environment. Everybody's there for the same reason, to accomplish these pictures and this time. So it's kind of a pressures off and fun levels up sort of environment.
That was what I liked the best about it, because for me going in, I didn't work with models. I think it was really the first time in that type of scenario, you know, and they would ask, okay, so what do you want me to do? And I would say, well, you're the professional. Like I shoot, like my kind of wheelhouse is shooting candids of people and capturing that offbeat moment. And for me to sit there and direct and say, oh, well, put your, you know, chin over here, your hand over here. It was the first time out. I thought, wow, this is really, I can't do that. But watching you guys do it. And of course these girls were all into it. They would start doing their own thing. And I'd say, oh yeah, that's great. I like that. And I could build off of that.
Right.
Yeah. Or watching you guys work or some of the other people, you know, in attendance at the workshop. And I would say, oh yeah, that's a great technique right there. And I liked watching how you would interact with those models, because I mean, your first time out, how would you even know how to direct?
Right. It is tricky. And there's just times when you've got an image in your head and you're trying to explain it. And this is actually one of my favorite things to do, is watch people try and explain a complicated concept that they've got running in their head. Their imagination's fired. They're all wired to try and do this picture, but they're trying to tell somebody mm-hmm. how to do it, who's facing them. So it's like, turn left. No, your other left. Your left. My left. Chin that way. No, the other way. So that's all part of it. And actually, some of my favorite pictures are the picture that's shot like right in that moment, and everybody's laughing. You know, like. The moment's gone, everybody's breaking character, and it's just you can just see like everybody's having a great time, and then we get right back into it, you know, and that image, everybody's working to get as close to that image and that vision as possible.
So where would somebody find a model? Say you can't make the workshop, you want to, or where do you guys find your models?
A lot of our best models are found by word of mouth. So somebody that we have experience with, we ask them and they make recommendations. So that's sort of our primary. The bigger our network gets and the more connections we make, the easier that process gets. there is also websites that are tuned for this, like Model Mayhem.
Right.
And Model Mayhem is great for certain things. But it's a great way, particularly, of getting in touch with amateur models that are willing to work with photographers and who are trying to grow their portfolio. And they're into it for a variety of things. There's very employed professionals that are on Model Mayhem, and then there's people who are just at the very interim stage and dabbling, and maybe this is something I want to try. So as a photographer looking for somebody, I mean, if you want to grow, connecting with a model who's had a lot of experience, who's worked with a lot of photographers, that model can actually do a lot of instructing and kind of coaching, guiding. There can be a whole sort of mentoring relationship that develops there from the model. A model takes ownership and leadership, but there's also the other side where a photographer with a lot of experience can bring in a model who maybe doesn't have all the experience in the world, and together you kind of work at it you see what you can come up with.
But so, if neither have experience, you're probably going to sit there and stare awkwardly.
Well, it can happen. Yeah. Hopefully there's enough intention behind both people. They're both kind of recognizing the role and what they're trying to achieve, that it does go somewhere. But I've been a part of some pretty awkward shoots.
Yep. So I think one of the things is everybody I know, or most people we talk to, seem to think they know what their good side is. They don't always. It's not always the case. Do good models know what their best side is?
I think that's an interesting question. Because a photographer wants to take ownership of that, and a model wants to take ownership of that. Don't shoot me on that side. That's not my good side. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that from photographers too. Of like, don't tell me what side your good side is. I'll tell you, and I'll light to bring out your strengths and to make it as flattering as I can. So don't limit me by saying you can only pose on this side or whatever. So that's an interesting dynamic. One of the challenges with working with models is just the natural kind of insecurity that exists with people. And it's a kind of unnatural thing to be in front of a camera and be the focus of that kind of attention and stuff. We don't usually walk around in our everyday lives with that sort of presence with a camera pointed at us and people trying to take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this kind of unnatural thing. And I think the more that you work at it, even in one shoot, right? You come together and you work at it, even in one shoot, that feeling can dissipate if you're both into it, if you're, talking to each other like you're humans and carrying on a good conversation. The camera can be kind of incidental, and then the pictures just look really natural, right? So that's, yeah.
So with that in mind, I do recommend, having experienced this, I do recommend checking out a workshop if you're looking to get into this kind of thing. Do that for the first time and then go from there. But with that in mind, and you guys have a workshop coming up, you probably have a seat available. In fact, I know you do.
We do.
You'd like to give that away. That's what I've been told. And so if anybody is in the Vancouver area or is willing to be, wants to come and attend, we're going to send out a tweet when you hear this on Monday morning, and all you need to do is retweet that, and you guys are going to pick somebody at random to come out and be a part of the workshop.
That's right. Yep.
Great.
We have a seat set aside for somebody who wants to join us.
So anybody out there listening, and everybody out there listening, think about it. I mean, first of all, Vancouver is a great place to come. If you don't live there, hey. Great excuse to come on and see the city.
That's right.
But if you are in the area and you want to come out and attend, highly recommend it. And what a great way to do it without any risk.
It's true. Yep.
And websites. Where can people find more information about the Light Gangsta workshops?
Our own website is lightgangsta.com. That's probably the sort of touch point that we would recommend. And we're also on Twitter at lightgangsta. And that's G A N GSTA, like Gangsta.
And we'll put a link to that on our site. Brad, thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me. This has been a blast. It's great to share, you know, some of my enthusiasm about photography.
Happy to have you, and look forward to seeing you soon.
Thanks. You bet. I look forward to it too.
And we're back. Models, Adam.
Enlightening.
Yes.
I like models.
That's the life. You're just working with, like, well, yeah.
No, but there's a difference, models. Right? No, I mean, obviously, we all like models. What I was going to say was, before I get myself into any trouble, it's just fun. You know, it's fun to go on these workshops. It's fun to get a chance to work with models because it's a lot less work for the photographer. Like, they know what makes them look good. So oftentimes they know much better than you even what makes them look good. And so their angles, their head tilts, like, they've done it enough that they kind of will guide you in the right direction. So you might have something specific in mind, lighting, but they're going to kind of lead you to a cool expression or, again, pose or something you might not have thought of. Whereas with your kids, you're going to have to make more of it happen.
Right. And plus, when I emotionally manipulate my wife, I have to live with it, but here I can just walk away.
Yes, also a big bonus, yeah.
It's definitely the way to do it. Yeah, it is definitely a lot of fun. So I do recommend, if you have an opportunity to go on one of Dwayne's workshops, do it. You're going to get... What I liked about Dwayne's workshop that we went to last year, and couldn't make the one this year, but the one I went to last year is that there's really, if you want... There's no flies on you. Like, you are moving. You're constantly shooting. There is no downtime. And there's always something happening that you can get in on and like, learn from each other, learn from Dwayne and Brad. And it really is a worthwhile experience.
Well, and I've been on a couple. The last one I went to was the one I went to with you. And you're going to learn something. You're going to learn about lighting because there's usually, you know, a number of different lighting setups. And you're also going to learn from, you know, you do them in little groups with other photographers, and you're going to learn from each other, and watching what other people do is going to give you other ideas. And so it really is a good kind of environment to just learn from each other and learn from the models. So I highly recommend it. I've found it each time I've come away with something that I would use in my photography.
As have I, the one for one on that one.
There you go.
Next week's challenge, let's shoot models.
Great.
I don't know any. Do you know any models?
I got a couple in the house.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sweet talker.
Yeah.
Great. I mean, you meant your family, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Not yeah. In your basement.
Okay. No, okay, we're clear.
Yeah. Whew. Yeah, it just could have come out weird.
Yeah.
So let's shoot some models or model. So there you go. Websites. Adam. Where can
Schwartz.
People find your stuff?
Oh, I jumped the gun. AdamSchwartz.ca. And sometimes on Two Hosers Facebook, I did come through with what I said and put some of the photos from both the Canada Day and the Soyuz trip on Facebook, so people saw those. So I think for the most part, as soon as I say it on the show, it makes me committed to actually following through. So I'm going to try to get some wedding photos up there soon.
Well, I'm going to buy a Ferrari.
Yay!
Don't know if it works like that, like The Secret. All right. Okay. My stuff at alanatridge.com or the two of us at twohosers.com, where you can find all the links to everything that we just talked about. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.